And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Well, we're going to have a great time today because we have a man who's very special, going to be my guest, and I always love to have Galen Ross. I guess formerly it's Robert Galen Ross Sr., but we'll just call you Galen Ross if I could do that today. But Galen is author of many books. I have about four in front of me here. You know, he's the guy that did the directory, Who's Who of the Elite. Well, it's at volume 9 now. And we'll talk about that in just a minute. Who's who of the elite? Of course, we'll also discuss the elite itself. What is it all about? The new books, he's got two terrific new books. The Elite Control Everything of Significance. That's interesting, isn't it? The Elite Control Everything of Significance. And then there's another book out. Boy, I don't know how he manages to keep up like he does. Maybe he has a wife now. We'll give her all the credit. Naoma, she's in the studio today, his lovely wife. So welcome, Naoma, to Power of Prophecy. The book is called, What Will It Be, An Elite Global Union or an Islamic Global Caliphate? You know, it looks like we're going one of two ways here. We're going the elite global union, or we're going to be an Islamic global caliphate. Looks like America's caught in the middle of those two things. But a little later on, we're going to tell you how to get Who's Who of the Elite. We're also going to tell you how to get these books, how to go to Galen Ross's website and buy these books. But right now, I just want to welcome Galen Ross to the program.
It's always a pleasure to be with you, Tex. You're so knowledgeable and informed, and we have such a big time.
Yeah, we do. You know, Galen, we've been friends for many years now. Then you moved up to Kerrville. But that's just right around the corner here in the Hill Country. Very beautiful place. But it's always good to be with you and talk about these subjects. And, of course, we've talked about them before, as you know. But you've got a widespread background. I mean, you were in the military as an intelligence officer. You were a consultant. In fact, you and Naoma many, many years ago were in the same company, right?
Right.
And what is that in?
That was in Houston.
Oh, Houston. Okay.
Great tool company.
All right. And so, you know, you've really been around, and you started doing these books. Oh, I don't know, what, about 15 years ago?
The first one was published in 95.
Well, that's a question for you. You know, you've written so many terrific books. You're the author of Who's Who of the Elite. What motivates you to write all these books? What grabs you, you might say?
Well, Tex, in 1972, I had built a factory over in the east side of Houston and hired one of my old friends at Cameron Ironworks to be my chief inspector, and so we were putting this company together, and one day Harry came into my office and he says, Galen, I've got a book I'd like for you to read. And I said, Harry, I'm really, really hemmed up. I don't have a whole lot of time. But he said, no, this is important. And I said, well, Harry, if you say it's important, I'll read it. So I took the book home and started reading it, and I couldn't put it down. The title of the book was None Dare Call It Conspiracy by Gary Allen. And that book told me that there was a curtain and there was somebody behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't get that out of my mind. I had to find out, first of all, why there was a curtain and who was behind the curtain. And, most people find it very difficult to dig into secret things, and I just have a natural ability to ferret out stuff that a lot of people don't notice. And so I started researching, and I decided I want to know who is behind the curtain, And then I found out that, or decided that there must be a lot of them. So I run across the Council on Foreign Relations, and that said, well, that's one of the major ones. Maybe there's others. And one day I was walking through the stacks in the library at Southwest Texas University, and just I was cutting across, and I all of a sudden stopped and turned to the right and reached up on the shelf, and there's a little book about 6x4 or something like that in size, and I pulled it off the shelf, and it was so old and ragged that there was a title left on it, so I had to open to the title page, and it was titled David. That's all it was. And so I started reading that, and just by chance, I just opened it up to page 78. And the middle paragraph on page 78 was the term Bilderberg. And that's the first time I'd ever heard of the term Bilderberg. And it was turned out that David Rockefeller was heavily involved in that. So I said, that's the second one. And then I found out later he created the Trilateral Commission. And so then I was on the road then. I knew who they were. I knew the overall organizations. And so I started digging in, and I wrote to the Council of Foreign Relations and asked for a list of their members. And they sent me their annual report.
Mm-hmm.
They had all of the members in the index. And I said, this is great. And so I wrote a letter to the Trilateral Commission and asked for a copy of their members. And they sent me a copy of their minutes and their members. And, of course, American Free Press out of Washington publishes the information on the Bilderberg. So I got to dig in through them and got a lot of that information. And so then I started sitting down on my little old Apple computer and started entering names. And I don't know how many names, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 names entered in the first book, which was published in 1995, Who's Who of the Elite. And now this version 9 has almost 15,000 names in it. So it's been a little chore. But
15,000 names. Well, I see here you have, it's Who's Who of the Elite, Volume 9, covers list all the members of the Bilderbergs, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Order of Skull and Bones, or Skull and Bones Society. And I think this is the only book that lists them all. I think there's a book or two that maybe lists them, but this book does it all. You can get it one big piece.
But this also goes back to the day that these organizations were founded and listed every member since the organizations were founded. That's how I got up to 15,000
wow,
members.
Wow, 15,000. And you've got their general, you know, their name, what they're doing now, you know, where they're at.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting that a country of 320 million, which is America, and, you know, how many would you say right now are members of, let's say, the Bilderbergs and the Council on Foreign Relations?
I'd guess on an order of 4,000.
Just 4,000.
Right, active members today.
But, you know, I see these people every time I turn on TV, Galen, you know, the talking heads and such.
Yeah.
They introduce a person. It's a guy that is a member of the CFR or Bilderberg or whatever. It seems like they have a list. They only call from that list, right?
Yeah. Hmm. It's a buddy list.
A buddy list. Yeah. Well, my name's not in here, I don't think, is it?
No.
Okay.
You're horizontally opposed to any of this.
Yeah, that's true. You're right on that. I don't even see your name. As distinguished as you are, Galen, your name's not in here.
No, I'm very opposed to this group.
Okay. So that's what we're doing here. Well, who do you think the main leaders are? If you had to choose, one or two, who would be the top dogs, the top of the elite stack?
Tex, I didn't think I would ever get to the top, but I'm pretty stubborn. And I did get to the very top. In the United States, the big guy is David Rockefeller. In Europe, Western Europe, it's David D. Rothschild. And David's father was an agent of the Rothschilds.
Mm-hmm.
He's an agent of the Rothschilds. But he manages, he sort of is the chief operating officer, and David D. Rothschild is the chief executive officer. And now I'm convinced that there's a board of directors. I don't have any evidence of that, but I think there's a board of directors in Switzerland made up of 3 to 5 men, super bankers, people worth quadrillions of dollars. And maybe someday I'll be able to dig that deep, but it's going to be really tough because they are really in the deep shadows.
Mm.
And may not ever make that, but I suspect there's a board of directors.
Well, you know, I might say here, there's another book that you have too. I don't know if you still have any copies to sell or to offer people, but it's about the serial elite killers. In other words, the assassins of Abraham Lincoln, of John F. Kennedy. And I do you still have that book available?
Yes, or? I do. It's the title of it is The Elite Serial Killers of Lincoln, JFK, RFK, and MLK.
Okay. And well, you know that book, it's very interesting that after you wrote this book, they interviewed her before, but they finally released a tape. Was it CBS or ABC or whatever? Released a tape of the program they did with Jackie Kennedy, in which it had been hidden in the, you know, in the files, in the archives, and her daughter Caroline would not let it be released. And suddenly then they released this tape, and there she was being interviewed, and of course she's passed away now, but Jackie Kennedy herself said her husband was killed by a conspiracy. And she believed that Lyndon Johnson, who became vice president at the time, was a member of that, or part of that conspiracy. So here's Jackie Kennedy herself. If that interview had come forth at the time, evidently it was covered up. The elite, let's just call them at the network, decided not to let people know. But if that had come out, it would have caused a real stir at the time. Because they still officially insist, that it was Lee Harvey Oswald, although that's as silly as can be. So, you were right about that, about the meeting that occurred, the night before and all those things, weren't you?
Yes, there was a meeting the night before JFK was killed in Dallas, and it was held at one of, Clint Murchison's houses, off Preston Avenue in North Dallas. And there were 25 members of the media and 25 members of the elite or friends of the elite at this social event. So-called reason for the event was to honor J. Edgar Hoover, who was in town. And Madeline Brown became a friend of mine, and she was Lyndon Johnson's mistress for 21 years, gave birth to his only known son. And she was, anytime Johnson was in Texas, they were always arranged for her to be nearby in case he could slip off. And, so she had an in with all the big wheelers and dealers of that time. And, so they invited her to this Clint Murchison social event. And she, as I said earlier that she became a friend of mine. Every time I'd go to Dallas, we'd go to lunch or dinner and she would talk about assassination. And, but she never changed one word.
Mm.
I mean, it just like it was a recording. And I would ask her a question, and she'd always come back with exactly the same answer. And so she was there that night, and she said about 11:15 or 11:30, something like that, in the evening, the party was about to break up. But all of a sudden, Lyndon Johnson came in the front door, And Clint Merkson stood up and says, okay, now we can have our meeting. So 25 men got up and went into the conference room and closed the door. And in my book, I list all of the men that were in this secret meeting, and I also list all the media that were there just socially. Helen Thomas was one of them. At that time, she was Associated Press. And but anyway, I name all the people that's in the meeting. H.L. Hunt was there. John Connally was there. And so with John Connally being there at this secret meeting, he knew that Kennedy's going to be killed the next day. And just by according to the arrangements, just so happened John Connally sat right in front of Kennedy in the limousine. So you know that he was really sweating, that he knew the shots were going to be fired. And as a matter of fact, there was several witnesses right by the limousine when the shots were fired. And several people said that Connally says, my God, they're going to kill us all. Now, Lee Harvey Oswald is not a they, but he said they are going to kill us all. And they did shoot Connally, didn't kill him. But in my book, I tell there were six shooters, one behind the grass at Noel. There were two on the sixth floor of the Texas School Book Depository building, one in the Dowtex building, and one on top of the Dallas County Records building. And on the second floor of the records or the book depository building, there was the guy that controlled the event, and he had a walkie-talkie radio. And when the limousine got to the right place, he said, shoot. Well, at each one of these positions where there were shooters, there was a radio operator.
Mm-hmm.
And so just as soon as he told them to shoot, then they hollered shoot, and there were six shots fired within a four-second period of time. And but the Warren Commission says there was only three shots, and Lee Harvey Oswald was the only one shot.
One of them was magic, wasn't it? When the bullet right. went,
yeah,
changed
yeah.
direction in mid-course.
One hit John Connally. One of them hit John Connally that it went through Kennedy in the neck, turned right after it came out, went down and hit him in, I believe it was in the shoulder, and then turned left and went down and hit him in the thigh, and then lay on the floor, pristine, with no evidence on it. So that was the so-called magic bullet. And but I had a lot of very interesting interviews getting to this this book, and I have interviewed six people that were at the Clint Merkson event the night before, and I have four of them on tape. I hadn't released that yet. The most important one asked me not to release it until he or she is dead, so I won't do that, or until that person gives me permission to release it.
Mm-hmm.
And and a lot of people say that Madeline was wrong. There was no secret meeting the night before. That they really put her down as being a liar. But as I said earlier, I never caught her saying the same thing except accurately the same way. She didn't change her story. So I was set on my ranch a couple of years after that, and one of the guys that came out to look at it saw that I had that book on my shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And he turned to me and he says, I was there. And I said, excuse me? He said, I was there. I said, you were where? He He said, I was at the Clint Markson social event the night before Kennedy was killed. And he's in the book. I name him.
Mm-hmm.
He was with the Associated Press. And but I couldn't get him to give me a video interview because he said his contract with the Associated Press said that he was never allowed to give any personal information about any events he covered, that mm-hmm. all had to be done through the network. So he said, I can't, even though I'm no longer employed by him, I can't really mm-hmm. deal it.
Hmm.
But I couldn't get him on video, but we sat down and had a long discussion there, and mm-hmm. and he named all the people that were there socially and then the secret meeting, and that matched exactly the list that Madeline gave me, and which matched exactly the list of four other people that mm-hmm. were there. So a lot of people put my book down because they say Madeline was a liar and all that, so my book must not be worthwhile, and that's okay.
Oh, well, I think your book is very important. But Madeline Brown was the mistress to LBJ.
Yes.
That's been verified.
Yes.
Confirmed and all of that.
Right.
Now, Americans don't even know that. I mean,
most
American.
Don't.
Yeah, well, a lot of them do. That's true. That child, she has a picture in the book of the child.
Yes.
It's, you know, just like, looks like LBJ's. Well, it is his son. So, she had to keep very quiet about this during the time he was alive.
Yes.
Or she'd have ended up dead. There's so many in that whole JFK thing that, you know, Moore and Schmidt, all those people later ended up dead, that knew anything at all. They just plain wiped the whole books of that, didn't they?
Yes.
Starting with Lee Harvey Oswald, right. Murdered him. Well, it's just, it's amazing that, you know, in 68, they had that assassination subcommittee, of the Congress, and they concluded that there was indeed a conspiracy, but they said, well, it's too late now to do anything about it.
Right.
You know, goodness gracious.
Don't correct history.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't change the history or thing. Just too late to do anything about it. Well, I didn't mean to get you off on them. You know so many things about so
well,
much
that it
gets
I'm,
you off.
Luckily been tied up in many very interesting situations, and so I can get diverted very easily, Tex.
Well, yeah, and you're from Austin, Texas. Seems like Austin, Texas is the center of everything now.
Right.
In the whole universe. So, let's talk about David Rockefeller and David Day Rothschild. Of course, David Day Rothschild, there's also Jacob and his son Nathaniel from Great Britain. But David seems to be the chief honcho here.
Well, Jacob, and I've got all the information in the book, but the Rothschild family in Western Europe and in England got together and decided who was going to be the leader, and,
mm-hmm.
and David D. Rothschild turned out to be the one they selected. And in families like that, once you select the big guy, everybody goes along with him. You don't argue with him. He's totally in control.
Yeah. But they have Rothschilds. There are a number of them, aren't there, in Europe?
Yes.
In the United States. And I've seen some of their homes. You know, I did a book on the homes, and had a section down there on the Rothschilds. Beautiful mansions
yes.
around the world. Well, so Rockefeller, sort of the Western,
right.
or the United States, I should say, and then Rothschild handles the European.
Yes.
You know, this goes all the way back to the oil, early oil days. Remember in Kazakhstan there, they in 1918, they had the overthrow of the Soviet Union, or the Russia, I should say,
right.
the Russian Tsar by Lenin, Trotsky, and Stalin. And Rothschild and Rockefeller even divided up the oil then.
And the Rothschilds financed the Bolshevik Revolution.
Yes. That's one thing that I read in your book, I think it was, where they highly respected Rockefeller. You'd think that they would throw brickbats at him and spit on him. But when he came to the Soviet Union, David Rockefeller, boy, they gave him a parade, and he was treated like royalty, wasn't he?
He was royalty.
Yeah, this was
unofficially.
This was in the days of the communists.
Right.
Well, boy. Yeah, he was royalty, I guess, but you would think that the head of Chase Manhattan Bank would have been run out of the country, but boy, they liked him. I mean, they saw him as their money man, evidently.
Yeah, he was very, and he still is a very powerful person.
Hmm.
And, but I think I read in one of your books that you quoted from Alexander Solzhenitsyn that there was 66 million middle-class people were murdered by the Bolsheviks in the Soviet Union to bring in communism. Almost no one talks about that number.
No, they don't. 66 million. What a monumental number. But, you know, the Obama, he talked about a collective vision the other day during his inaugural speech. When you say something during an inaugural speech, it's not an accident, is it?
No,
it's and it doesn't mean something that it's not.
It's all scripted.
It means exactly what it says, doesn't it? So that's when he talked about a collective vision for America. Boy, that's just communist through and through, isn't it?
Yeah, and well, of course we're not here to talk about Obama, but it's my belief that he's a socialist, and his job is to socialize the United States.
Hmm. We sure went a long way with that, with Obamacare.
Right.
What is the goal of these people right now? What are the most immediate things that they're looking for in America?
The elite want to create, the ultimate goal is to create a global union or the New World Order. And it started when they created the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
And then less than a year later, they created the African Union, made up of all the nations of Africa. And the next job was to create the American Union. And so I wrote to C-SPAN and asked them to send me a copy of every video that they've done in the past that included David Rockefeller.
Hmm.
And he had been involved, and he created the American
Council of the Americas.
Council of the Americas, right.
I recall that, yeah.
And their goal then was to change it from Council of the Americas to the American Union.
Mm-hmm.
But a young man down in Venezuela jumped out in front of him named President Hugo Chavez.
Yeah.
And he saw what was going on, and so he got with all the Latin American leaders and created the South American Union and created their own central bank and loaned money to all the nations so that they could pay off their the World Bank and the other banks that they'd loaned money from. And so then they were out of the control of the elite that way. And, but they'll, Chavez has been, operated on four times for cancer, and he won't be here much longer, and then they will complete the American Union.
Well, that's, wow. Well, when we come back, we're going to have to take a break now, Galen. When we come back, I want to ask you about the United States Constitution, Bill of Rights, gun control, these kind of issues. Where does the elite stand? And how are we going to fight that? So when we come back, let's discuss those things.
Okay.
All right. You're listening to Tex Mars. I'm with my friend Galen Ross. We're talking about the elite and what's going to happen to America. Stay with us, won't you? Hello again, friends. Tex Morris here. You know, Galen Ross's book, Who's Who of the Elite, Volume 9, is very important. And I've always enjoyed having my copy of this book because it lists all the members of the Bilderbergs, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Skull and Bone Society, and the Trilateral Commission. It's the only directory that I know where you can find them all out. You know, you can keep it in your library at home. And my library is just my bookcase. I call it my library. You know, it sounds fancy when you say your library. But keep it at home with you. Keep it on the book stand there on your coffee table. And when you have a question, when you see somebody on TV, we'll look them up. You know, James, author Curtis. I just turned to one of the pages. Here's Charles James. He's Assistant Attorney General in the Justice Department. There's Henry James. He's an ambassador. So there's all kinds of people, all kinds of listings in here for these folks. Of course, some are more important than others. Galen Ross has talked about David Rockefeller as one of the elite. But you'll see the names of all of these people, the positions that they hold. And here's the interesting thing. You'll find out this is sort of a cross-check, because you'll see, well, let's see, he was a member of the Bilderberg and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Skull and Bones. Wow. He's hit them all here just about. So, and of course, there's the Trilateral Commission, too. We don't want to miss them. But you just sort of look through this thing and brief through the pages, and, well, what do you find here? I mean, people are just, here's Condoleezza Rice, for example, and I see she's a member of the Bilderbergers, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission. Of course, she was a former secretary, the Secretary of State, State Department. She was a professor at Stanford University, former national security advisor. And now, well, Ms. Condoleezza's been given a job by CBS or NBC or one of those. I suspect she'll be running for president next time around, probably against Hillary Rodham Clinton. But his book can't tell us that. That's 2016. But I just thought I'd add that in. Who's who of the elite? The only one like it. This is Volume 9, so he keeps them up. Who's who of the elite? Members of all of these groups. And I think this is a wonderful reference for you to have. Now, for your gift of $35 to the ministry, just $35, we'll send you this big book. It's encyclopedic. Who's who of the elite? Volume 9. $35. Please add $5 shipping and handling. A total of $40. Now, here's how to get your book. Well, you can write to us, send us $40 total, and we have plenty of copies of this. And if we don't, Gail, I guess we can run on down to Kerrville there. And oh, you'll get them to me. Okay. Well, I know he works full-time exposing the elite, and so he'll get us plenty of copies. We're not going to run out, folks. Who's who of the elite? For $35 plus $5 shipping and handling, total of $40. Just send your $40 to Power Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, that's Patterson Road, Austin, Texas. And, of course, that would be the Republic of Texas, but we don't want to tell anybody about that. Just put down Austin, Texas, 78733. You can phone us during the work week, Monday through Friday. Just phone us at 1-800-234-9673 and say, hey, give me that book, Who's Who of the Elite. All right? And the friendly receptionist will take care of your order for you. Hey, our website, powerofprophecy.com, powerofprophecy.com. And of course, when you order, if you're not receiving our newsletter, well, we're going to make sure you do, okay? You don't have to ask for it. We're going to go ahead and put you on the mailing list and you'll get our newsletter. You have to ask not to get it. That's the thing. Now, did you have something, Galen?
Yeah, shortly after I published Who's Who of the Elite V9, mm-hmm. I published a companion book, and it's titled The Elite Control Everything of Significance, and it takes this same list that's mm-hmm. in Who's Who and sorts them by where they work. Wow. And then it becomes obvious that they control everything of significance.
Wow. The elite control everything of significance. So now you've got this from your organization right now.
Right.
Okay. Well, tell us how to get that. Would you tell us your address and such?
You can either call my toll-free number, 800-4 1-800-410-5571, or you can go to my website, www.4rie.com. That's 4rie.com, or 800-410-5571.
Okay. Now, this book is, let's see, it's $35 also. Right. So you get the basically the same thing as everything, Who's Who of the Elite?
Exactly the same list.
Wonderful.
Sorted by where they work.
And it's called The Elite Control Everything of Significance.
That's right. So and it shows all the people in the State Department, Defense Department. In the very beginning, it shows, I believe I start with Office of the President in the front. And then I go to the State Department and the Defense Department. And when you look at that, it becomes absolutely obvious that they control everything.
Yeah, and I love the back of this book, too, Rothschild's organization chart. I mean, you've got everything, pages and pages on the Rothschilds, all of the banking consortiums that they own. Boy, this is just really, really interesting.
Well, I happened to run across one of their annual reports, and in this annual report was their organization chart. And so it's in the appendix of this book.
And you have them by country, too.
Yes.
So you can find it if they're United States or from somewhere else.
Right.
In here. Okay, that's The Elite Control Everything of Significance. Now, would you give us your phone number again?
It's 800-410-5571.
Okay, now the address, people want to just get this. They can send, well, how much, $35 plus?
It depends on which book. If they go to my webpage, it'll tell you what the prices are. If you call my 800 number, I'll tell you over the phone.
Sure, you just tell them over the phone. Yeah. Okay, so great. All right, we'll do that. Now, I want to mention, though, the book we're going to be talking about now is, here's the title, What Will It Be, An Elite Global Union or an Islamic Global Caliphate? So Dr. Ross has given us this book, An Elite Union, Global Union, or an Islamic Global Caliphate. So this is very, very important, folks. Now, you may want to get this book, too. Now, this book...
It's just $20.
Just $20. Wow, it's a big book for $20. Well, you really want people to know about this information. Well, people can get this also by calling your 1-800 number or writing to you.
Yes.
Okay, directly. Okay. Now, if we get some in here, we're just going to pass them on to you if they get them by accident.
Okay.
All right. Now, let's talk about this book a little bit. An Islamic Global Caliphate. What is a caliphate?
Almost no one in the United States is familiar with very much about Islam. A caliphate is a regional, political, and religious area.
Mm-hmm.
It could be small or could be covered the whole United States as a caliphate. But it's headed up by what they call a caliph, C-A-L-I-P-H, caliph. And he's head of this caliphate. And he enforces the laws that you find in the Quran. And then they also use Sharia law to keep their people under control. And when you get down into the deep studies of the, particularly the radical Islamist, it gets pretty, very scary. I won't say pretty scary. I'll say very scary.
Now, how many Islamists, how many people who are Muslims, I know of the black Muslims of Louis Farrakhan up in the Chicago area, but how many Muslims are there in the United States today?
I have that figure in the book.
Yeah, see,
I don't have
it
in my head, but I also have the number of mosques that were created in three different periods. And you can see that the number of mosques are building. And then I said, well, who's financing all this? So I got to check it around. It turned out the King Abdullah of the Saudi Arabia financed the construction of all of these mosques. So David Rockefeller and David Rothschild are head of one group, and King Abdullah is head of the other group.
Wow. So this is Saudi Arabia, basically.
And their philosophies are absolutely horizontally opposed.
Mm-hmm.
The elite believe in making all the interest they can from the banks. Under Islamic law, the Quran says it's a violation of the law to charge usury, which is interest.
Yeah.
And so they're not interested in making a lot of money, whereas the elite, all they want to do is make money.
Yeah.
So they're actually horizontally opposed.
Hmm.
And the Quran, I've got it. You can find it on their English translation of the Quran on the internet. And so I went through that and looked for keywords, and I did a search on the term kill.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the laws in the Quran says that the Islamists are obligated and commanded to kill the infidels.
I wonder who that is, an infidel.
Infidel is anyone that's not a Muslim.
Anyone who's not a Muslim.
That's a Jew or any other religion.
Do they give you a chance to convert first before they...
They'll give you a chance to convert. Uh-huh. But also, I found out one of the...
I'm just being tongue-in-cheek, of course, you know.
One of the paragraphs says in there that Islamist, if he decides to get out of the Islamic religion...
Mm-hmm.
And go into baptism or something like that, or Baptist church, or it's a duty of the Islamists to kill him.
Wow. So it would have been better if he had been just a heathen and then he becomes a Christian. That's not as bad as if he's a Muslim and he converts to Christianity. Then he's really, he's worthy of death then.
It's one of their laws says you must kill that guy.
Wow. That's why some of the pastors that Iran recently has, tried. Evidently, they were Mormon, they were Muslims before. Now they're Christians. So they're worthy of death according to the Muslim religion and the government.
They're thrown in prison.
Yeah.
In Saudi Arabia, there's laws against not only not being a church there, but you cannot proselytize.
Hmm.
You can't even mention Baptist to someone in Saudi Arabia. You're broken a law.
Now, Galen, let me just be the devil's advocate. I don't like being the devil's advocate. No. Let's be being an advocate.
You're
I don't want to do anything for the devil, right? But, I'm just wondering about this because they tell us all the time that we should not be too offensive. Don't be offensive to the Arabs. A couple years ago, they wanted to build, and I guess they still do, wanted to build a Muslim mosque, Ground Zero, right, very near where the World Trade Center's fell, 9/11. We were told to be sensitive to the desires. And I understand there were like 10 leaders or something like that, 10 Muslim clergy or imams, whatever you call them. And they all planned, they did all this in concert, and they went on an airline, and they sit in different places, and at a certain time, they all began to pray. And they pray, doesn't matter what you're doing, everybody on the plane, there might have been 200 people there, but they all started having their prayers all in public.
They had to get in the aisle of the airplane to do
it. Oh, in the aisle of the airplane.
Right.
And then, I guess the stewardess, the hostess and such, so you can't do that. And then they object, and they're going to take them to court. So they're pushing their religion right into our face. Yes. Now, I don't mind anybody being any religion they want. I'm going to be a Christian regardless. But I don't like it when somebody sticks it right in my face and then says, you're the one that's responsible. You're the one, goodness gracious. These people are in our country. At our leisure, we've let them come here. Of course, some of them are citizens. But why am I offending them? Why aren't they're offending the majority, which is me. Don't they have any sensitivity? How do you feel about that?
Well, the Quran lays out very specific laws. And by the way, the Quran since it was originally written somewhere like 2,000 years ago, has never been changed, never been misinterpreted. It's always been identical, and it lays out laws. For example, it says that it's okay for Islamists to lie to an infidel if it will get them where they want to go.
And wow, well, sounds a little bit like the Jewish another, Talmud.
Okay. But they're told it's okay to lie to everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And so their goal is to create this caliphate worldwide,
mm-hmm.
country by country. And I've got the number of Islamists that are in the United States over a several-year period, and it's building quite rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one good reason why these numbers are growing, and it's because of fertility rate. And, for example, in Afghanistan, the fertility rate is 7.07.
That's the fertility rate in Afghanistan.
Right. Okay. In Chad, it's 6.2. Somalia, 6.04. Where in Japan, it's 1.27.
Wow.
And a nation cannot maintain their way of life unless their fertility rate is at least 2.1.
Hmm. Now, the U.S. has a little bit less than that at 2.05.
Yeah, we're really right close to that breaking point.
Oh.
But you see, Canada is 4.3, China is 1.73, Germany 1.36. And if you take just a pure arithmetic average of all of these, it's roughly, they have fertility rate about four times the other people.
So they don't mind having more children than we do. Of course, in the United States, I guess our population is growing mainly from immigration.
That's right.
Rather than birth, because we've been telling, 55 million abortions so far.
And another reason for their tremendous growth is polygamy.
Hmm.
It's written in the Quran that if you can afford it, you can have four wives.
Oh, really?
That's a small number in Islam, though. In fact, Dea Humamadid of the United Emirates has 84 children and 17 wives.
Well, I don't know how I can, one is enough for me. I mean, you got one here, Naomi. I don't know how she feels about that. I don't think she wants any more. So, okay.
Well, another outstanding name in my book is Sheikh Mohammed bin Awad bin Laden. That's Osama bin Laden's father. Had 22 wives and 54 children.
Well, you have a lot of children when you only have one husband and 22 wives.
That's right. But see, their goal is to populate the world faster than the infidels do, and they're doing it.
So eventually, you know, they'll just by dint or by way of polygamy and by way of fertility rate, you know, they're going to overcome.
That's right. In fact, it's predicted now that by the year 2040, France will be an Islamic nation.
Mm. Is that right?
Yes.
France. Boy.
And they're taking over, well, all the countries. And in fact, I cover a lot of the opinions of each major nation in Western Europe,
mm-hmm.
of their opinion of what's going on within Islam. And it's all negative.
I was taken aback. In your book, you talk about Constantinople.
Yes.
And Constantinople, of course, was a great city, a Christian city.
It was the center of Christianity.
Yeah, the center of Christianity. Then finally, you know, Rome, between Constantinople and Rome were like the two headquarters
right.
of Christianity. And now it's almost about 99% Islamic.
Right.
So they go in there and they force you to change, or they kill you or whatever. So they can't just do like we do. I mean, Christians go to another country and we just keep worshiping as we do. We want the people to know of Jesus Christ, but we don't force them. You know, we have here in Austin, Texas, temples, and other religions, but we don't force anybody to go to the, I don't go there and preach and hand out, you know, brochures inside, the temple or whatever. I mean, I'm more than happy to debate them, but they haven't asked me to do that. But these people, they don't want you to have your religion, do they? I mean, they,
no.
So they're a decided minority in America, but they act like they're a majority already.
And they, wherever they go and as their numbers build, their goal is to, get the laws changed to Sharia law. And Sharia law is really bad.
Yeah.
It, for example, if, a man and woman commit adultery, the woman is to be buried up to her neck and then stoned to death. Now the man, he just buried up to his waist.
Oh.
And they stone him. And if he can get out, he's forgiven.
Oh, I see. If he can get out, he's free.
Right. But, the Quran and the Islamic religion in general, they really put the women down at a very low class, lower than a dog.
Well, now children too. I mean, this thing about killing children, these honor killings and all this.
That's right.
Here in the United States, we've seen that. A number of these occurring right here in the United States. So no one can say this does not happen.
That's
I'm
right.
not saying it doesn't happen and it does not, that it happens in every, Islamic family, but it does happen. And when it happens, in Muslim countries, these guys only get 4, 5, 6 years of punishment according to your book.
And it may just be forgiven.
Forgiven.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, in fact, there are places in London that Islamists have gone in and created their ghettos, and police won't go into those ghettos.
They just let them police them themselves and have their own courts. And
they within that ghetto, they go out Sharia law.
Wow. Well, I think in America, we've got one system, and you know, if you kill a child, boy, I mean, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, there is a reason for the death penalty.
Right.
And killing a child is a very good reason for it.
That'd be up the top.
Yeah, that'd be at the top. And, you know, Jesus even said that. You know, he said the angels in heaven, you know, watch over the children. And you know, he mentioned you'd be better to have a millstone tied around your neck and you'd be thrown in the depths of the sea than to hurt a child.
That's right.
How Jesus feels about it. So I think you and I are the same way. Well, so here we are in a country that we have an anti-polygamy act. We did it for the Mormons, but it's also good for the Muslims, right?
That's right. And so in a lot of areas, they sort of overlook the Mormons. And
yeah, that's
they're
true.
They're probably overlooking the Islamists. But but they, as they increase in numbers, and mathematically, they're going to increase.
Oh, yeah.
And as I said earlier, by 2040, France will be an Islamic nation.
Wow. That's going to be a shocker to everyone, isn't it?
So the wealthy people in Europe are trying to decide where we're going to go to live.
Of course, I'd have to say if they want to pay that 75% tax rate in France, let all the Muslims go there. I think they'll change the tax rate then. They won't like that at all. Well, you know, I have a whole lot of Muslims who write to me. And they want me to think that their religion is a good one. And so I don't. And, but you know, they say we're more moral than the Jews. We're more, you know, what would you call it? Pious, than others. I've always thought of the Jews and the Muslims as, like two scorpions in a bottle. You put two scorpions in a bottle, one's going to come out alive.
That's right.
And they're not going to coexist together.
No.
Even though they're both scorpions. And these people are both scorpions. To me, they're religious systems. One, the Jews have the Talmud or nothing, but they still have the Talmud they claim, even if they're a heathen. And the Muslims have this,
Quran.
So, now there is a moderate Islamic drive in there. How many moderate? When I say moderate, I mean they don't fully go into all the Sharia law and such.
I'm not sure we can find that. I've looked, but like any group of people, their majority would be fairly good to get along with.
Mm-hmm.
But there's always radicals, and according to the Quran, they're supposed to kill all infidels.
Yeah, they are. So, well, we only have a couple minutes. You need to come back again. We need to talk okay. about this again, because I want to know what to do. I mean, we have a free country here, what's left of it. How do we stop the global elite? I mean, the Rockefellers and Rothschilds. What do we? I mean, I see you have a solution here.
Yeah, let me cover the Islam first, in case we run out of time. I'm not wishy-washy about anything tax. You know me.
Well, that's true.
That.
Right.
I think because of their treatment of women and their desire to eliminate all other religions, I think we need to exclude them from coming to the United States at all.
Yeah, because they don't appreciate our Constitution
That's
or Bill
right.
of Rights.
And the Quran tells them not to meld into the society. They're to stay separate. And so they're not here to join us. They're here to conquer us. And so if you have a yard and it's well fenced and there's rattlesnakes all outside your fence and you got a little baby playing out there and somebody makes a hole in that fence and snakes come crawling in there. Are you going to let the baby stay in there with them? Or are you going to kill the snakes? Or are you going to fix the hole? Your goal should be to stop it.
Well, it seems like we ought to pass a law, an immigration law, which says that those who want to immigrate to the United States have to be in compliance and have to appreciate our Constitution and Bill of Rights and go along with our system. So that would, if we had that, that would stop the Islamic movement in America.
The Quran says it's legal for them to lie.
Yeah, well.
They can agree to do that.
Sure. They want to come here and then cause all this trouble.
That's right.
Well, we've only got about a minute left. What do we do about the global elite?
I think we ought to, Congress ought to pass laws saying that there should not be any person elected or hired in any federal, state, or municipal government that's a member of any secret group, Ku Klux Klan, or any of those secrets, including the Council of Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, and Bilderbergs.
That'd be a big exodus then from those groups, but they would still meet together and conspire together. So,
but we got to start with getting them out of our government.
Yeah, we do. That's true. Well, Galen Ross, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. You just really been a blessing to be with us. I hope you can come back again.
I'd love to, Tex. I always enjoy being with you.
All right. That's Galen Ross. He's the author of The Elite Control Everything of Significance. You can get it from his website. By the way, what is your website? What's your address?
It's www.4rie.com.
4rie.com. 4rie.com.
Right.
Okay. And you have the other book, book here on the global union, the elite versus the Islamic. We're sort of caught in a, right. between a rock and a hard place here, so to speak. And you have a book called What the Elite Have Done to America and How to Fix It. So you have some solutions. So everybody's always asking me, what do we do about this? Well, you always come prepared. You always have some solutions. So, well, thanks again. Well, folks, we've had Galen Ross on today. I hope you'll tune in next week. Tune in each week during the same time on the same radio station or here on powerofprophecy.com and discover the power of prophecy.